The Alan Watts iPhone app is now available on the iTunes App Store, featuring the entire Alan Watts podcast series at your fingertips. Visit alanwattsapp.com for more information.
I was discussing last night the Bodhisattva doctrine in Mahayana Buddhism, and comparing it, or relating it to, the two great tendencies in Indian spirituality: anti-worldliness, or otherworldliness, and world affirmation, and showing how the idea that the highest kind of a Buddha is in a certain way a non-Buddha. The highest kind of a Buddha is like an ordinary person. And this comes out very, very much in various tendencies in Zen, where, for example, all the painting peculiarly characteristic of Zen Buddhism in the Chinese and Japanese tradition is, as it were, secular. It has a peculiarly non-religious atmosphere. That is to say, the painting of Shingon sect and Tendai sect, as you saw it in the museum today, was religious painting. You could tell at once that the subject matter of these paintings is religious. But with Zen painting, the way of dealing with philosophical on spiritual themes is secular. So that when an artist like Sengai, living in the 17th century Japan, paints the Buddha, there is something slightly humorous about the Buddha. He wears his halo over one ear. There is an informality, a slight raffishness. And so this comes from China, from those great Sung artists like Liang Kai, who painted the sixth patriarch of Zen chopping bamboos, looking like the most extraordinarily unkempt country oaf. So, also, the greatest Zen painting has as its subject matter not really religious themes at all. It uses pine branches, rocks, bamboos, grasses, everything of that kind. And you would never know that these things were icons. Likewise also, in poetry, which we will go into more extensively in the future, the superb expression of Zen poetry is derived from the Chinese poet Hokoji, who says, "Wondrous action, supernatural power, drawing water, carrying fuel." Now, that poem is a little bit too religious for Zen taste. And so, preferable to that is Basho's famous poem, "The Old Pond, a frog jumps in, plop." Plop is the only possible English translation for the Japanese mizu no oto, which means literally the water's sound. Plop. But that poem, you see, is a very high style Zen poem, because it has nothing in it about religion. There is a poem on the edge, which also was written by Basho, which says, when the lightning flashes, how admirable he who does not think life is fleeting. You see, the flash of a lightning is a Buddhist cliché for the transiency of the world. Your life goes by and it disappears as fast as a flash of lightning. That becomes a cliché. So, all religious comments about life eventually become clichés. Religion always is falling apart and becoming a certain kind of going through the motions, a kind of imitation of attitudes, as if one would say, we've got a book called The Imitation of Christ. It's a terrible book. Because everybody who imitates Christ is a kind of a fake Jesus. So in the same way, there's all kinds of imitation Buddhas. Not just sitting on altars made of wood, gilded, but just sitting around in monasteries. So, one might say then that the highest kind of religious or spiritual attainment has no sign about it that it is religious or that it is spiritual. And so as a metaphor for this, there was used in Buddhism from the very beginning the idea of the tracks of birds in the sky. They don't leave any tracks. And so the way of the enlightened man is like the track of a bird in the sky. And as one poem, a Chinese poem, says, entering the forest, he does not disturb a blade of grass. Entering the water, he does not make a ripple. In other words, there is no sign about him to indicate that he is self-consciously religious. And this goes too for the fact that his not having any religious sign is also not something contrived. It isn't like Protestant simplicity. You know, all those Catholics with their rituals and how dreadful and insincere that is. The real reason, you know, why Protestants think Catholic ritual is insincere? You know? It's expensive. Protestantism started in the burgher cities of Europe. Places like Freiburg, Hamburg, you know, and Geneva. Because the merchant class, who were the foundation of the bourgeoisie, got annoyed because every time a saint's day came around, all their employees got a day off because it was a holy day and they had to attend Mass. There were so many of these nuisance holy days, and all these contributions that were assessed by the church, buying your way out of purgatory and saying Masses for the dead and so on and so forth, they found this not very economical. The priests were getting the money instead of the merchants. And so they decried as unbiblical and irreligious and wasteful all the finery of the Catholic religion and wanted something plain and simple. So it became, in course of time, a sign of being really religious to avoid rituals and to avoid colorful clothing and splendor in churches and to be as ordinary as possible. But that is not yet the real religion of me giving no sign of having a religion, because this simplicity and absence of ritual itself becomes a sign, a way of advertising how spiritual you are. So the completely bodhisattva type of person doesn't leave any track, either by being religious overtly or by being non-religious overtly. How will you be neither religious nor non-religious? See, that's the great test. How will you avoid that trap of being one or the other? It's like, are you a theist or are you an atheist? See, the theist is caught by God and the idea of God, the belief in God, but the atheist is equally caught. Because an atheist is very often an atheist, because he cannot stand the idea that God is watching him all the time. That there is this constant all-seeing eye prying on your most private life. And that there's this, you know how when you're a child in school and you're writing something or doing arithmetic and the teacher walks around the class and looks over your shoulder. Nobody wants to be watched like that. Even someone who's good at writing or at arithmetic doesn't want somebody looking over their shoulder while they're doing it. It puts you off. It bugs you. So the idea of the Lord God, who is watching us all the time, who is judging everything that we do, puts people off and they can't stand it. So better be an atheist to get rid of teacher. So, but the atheist, you see, the man who advertises his disbelief in God is a very pious person. Nobody believes in God like an atheist. There is no God, and I am his prophet. So then, the true bodhisattva state is very difficult to pin down as being either neither supremely religious nor blatantly secular. And people who think that the height of Buddhism or the height of Zen is to be perfectly ordinary have still missed the point, like the atheist has missed the point. But for this reason, then, there is an element in the art, the painting, the poetry, etc., which has been inspired by this kind of Buddhism. This kind of art where the subject matter is non-religious. Nevertheless, there is something about the way in which this non-religious subject matter is handled that stops you. And you know there's something strange about it. This is how I first became interested in Oriental philosophy and all that kind of thing. I had an absolute fascination for Chinese and Japanese painting, the secular painting, the landscapes, the treatment of flowers and grasses and bamboos. There was something about it that struck me as astonishing, even though the subject matter was extremely ordinary. And I, just as a child practically, I had to find out what was the strange element in those bamboos and those grasses. I was being, of course, taught by those painters to see grass. But there was something in there that one could never pin down, never put your finger on. And that was this thing that I will call the religion of no religion.
Been listening to Alan Watts from the Spoken Word Library of the Electronic University. For copies of this and other Alan Watts programs, please go to alanwatts.com on the World Wide Web or call us toll-free at 1-800-WO-WATTS. That's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS. The Watts website features free audio downloads, program lists, and information on Watts' life and works. Once again, that's alanwatts.com or 1-800-WO-WATTS.